accession number 19058, reel 4.
The good reel 4. Yes, it really was lovely to meet them all again and remember. And also, what is a bit touching, the widows also turned up, the widows of some that I had known. And it's lovely to meet them again. But what was so overwhelming, after I presented the shield to the mayor, il sindaco, I was presented with the wonderful, the Lion of Sartiano. If you can look over there.
Yes.
That was presented to me. That lovely
statue.
Yes, isn't it lovely? It's got a place of honour in my home. But it was... Then, of course, after that, we went to a fantastic feast in the leading hotel of Sartiano. Now, that is one place where partisans did so well. That's the Seymour Brigade. Now, let's talk about further up the Stella Rossa Brigade in the hills halfway between Florence and Bologna was Mario Mussolesi. He was a young fighter, he was tough. And he was the leader of the partisans. And he didn't know what to call him, but he really was so tough. I've spoken of the no-go area between Cetona and Sartiano. There was a no-go area in the mountain of Montisoli. No German dare go there. There was once a German vehicle with three or four Germans missed their way and went through this road. Well, they didn't survive. And Mario Mussolesi got all the people, the peasants from the farmhouses, and they all turned out through the night with those long-handled shovels that the peasants use. They're very good for. They dug into a field, a damn great pit, and buried the vehicle and the Germans there and covered it over so there was no trace whatever of it on this ploughed field. And that was done in one night. That was quite a feat, quite an effort. And they never, the Germans were looking for them. They never found them. Now, Kesselring was furious to think that they could have the cheek to make a place a no-go area. But he didn't punish just the partisans. He punished everybody on Montisoli. And I mean everybody. It was a darn great mountain. And he gave the orders. And the orders were carried out by Major Rede. Walter Rede, R-E-D-E-R, of the SS. On the night of the 29th and 30th of September, 1944, they surrounded the mountain and they started shooting. And the people up on the mountain said to their husbands, who were of partisan age, go to the top of Montisoli. Go right to the top. We'll be here. We'll be safe because we are old. Well, they weren't safe. And when they looked later, they saw that farms were being burnt, set ablaze, and they were coming slowly up the mountain. There were two churches, the one at San Martino and the one at Casalia, with the two priests. And the priests, there was a priest in each of the churches. And the people took refuge in those two churches, peasant churches, way up on the hill. And the priests were giving their incantations and saying, you are in the house of God, you will be safe here. They weren't. The SS, who had been drinking heavily, burst into each of the churches, the one at San Martino and the one at Casalia. They shot and bayoneted the congregation of each church. And then at Casalia, those who survived, they put them into the what was called the Campo Santo. That's the little cemetery about 100 yards away. A little ward cemetery, they put them there until they dispatched them cruelly. they would go back to the church, the churches. They would go back about every 15, 20 minutes. If there was anyone groaning, they would shoot or bayonet them to make sure they were dead. I think there were at least 6 pregnant girls who had their unborn ripped from them by bayonets that night. And during the night of the 29th and 30th September 1944, just under 2,000 old men, women, babies were massacred. It's the biggest massacre through the war. Now, you hear of Oda and the others. You
don't hear of,
yes, but you don't hear of this one. This is what's wrong with the news. What's wrong with publicity? What the whole world should know about the biggest massacre. It was bigger than Lediche, bigger than Oda, bigger than anyone else. 3 times as big as the next worst one.
Where was your unit at the time?
That's it. We were doing patrols on Monte Sole. I was... see, we didn't know that... We knew something... We knew that farmhouses were being fired. We thought it was just like a Russian scorched earth policy. We didn't know there was murders going on. And we had to go up into a... near the top of Monte Sole to a place called San Giovanni, where there were 2 houses, Di Sotto, Di Sopra. Di Sotto was the low one, and Di Sopra was the tall one, higher and lower. And when we went up, with me was the pioneer sergeant who had a mine sweeper. We were actually going up to see if San Giovanni would be fit for battalion headquarters. We thought the German line was further back than it was. When we got to the first Mr. McDougall, the flower fella, said, they're rather tall for Italians. He said, we must watch points. So we came back and then went around to Di Sotto. And there in the doorway, thank God he didn't see us, was a German with the tin hat. And we were on the bank, so looking through long grass at him. He didn't see us. He was gazing vacantly across to the other hills. And we could see on his lapel was the emblem SS. Well, we knew they didn't take prisoners, so we had to be pretty careful. So he sidled around and walked back into the house. Then we went back into a little wood where we're about a dozen fellas were rushing towards us. We had the dreaded order, every man for himself. And the pioneer sergeant, Phillips, and myself, we went one way, and the others went to the other. And we found ourselves going intermingling around positions on the hill towards a ravine. We were actually going through German positions. They were all there with their tin hats watching us. Now, we had soft woolen hats on, so they didn't quite recognize us, otherwise they would have shot us. And we ran down and got into the ravine and got back home in time for dinner, where we reported Mr. McDougall and his remainder of the patrol presumed taken prisoners. He said, oh, no, Mr. McDougall is already back. He's reported you missing. So that was a happy ending to that, except for that we didn't realise that that dozen who happened to be Italians, they weren't Germans, he said, the dozen were very frightened Italians, and so we let them be. It's a pity we didn't know of the massacre, otherwise they would have been forced back to our lines, not permitted to go right into a certain death, which is what happened. And I've been back now, last year, and there is a plaque in front of the house called Di Sotto, the plaque with a dozen names on it. Isn't that sad?
So if you had realised what was going on, how much difference would it have made?
It would have saved their lives. Mr. McDougall wouldn't have dreamed of letting them continue to go into there. He thought they were safe. He didn't know they were being all massacred.
But could you have saved others?
No. No. We couldn't get up to others. We went through the line as much as we could. We were right on the border of the line, or even slightly penetrating it. But up beyond that, there was absolutely... But we didn't know. We did not know. And had we known... I feel awful that these 12 died because we didn't know.
How do you spell Soli?
S-O-L-E, it means sun. Monte Soli, sun mountain. It's the high mountain of that region of the Apennines. It's the mountain that the sun is first seen in the morning, and the sun where it is last seen at night. So that's why it's called Soli. But there you see, Mario Musolesi was killed in this thing at Cadotto. I've been back for the 50th anniversary of the massacre. The president of Italy was there. I'll have a sip. The Archbishop of Bologna was there. We met them all. It was then, on the 50th anniversary in 1994, that the president of Italy declared it a national park. We're no more building. It's a peace park. And there's an hotel there, which Germans go to, anybody else. It is dedicated to peace. And I like to go there. But of course, I don't have to really pay to go there, because I go in the farmhouse nearby with the old friends, where they are one of the few people living in that isolated part.
What do you remember after Monte Soli?
My friend went with an intelligence patrol, not me, Sergeant Hughes and others. They were captured for a few days. They were crossing the Po, and they were captured. And they were going to be shot by the SS, the same SS, you see, had retreated there under Major Walter Raeder. The Germans were in full retreat, and they were a nuisance. They didn't know what to do, so they handed them over to the SS, of all people. And it was my pal that I go to, and he's got a house in Italy now, he and Sergeant Hughes and others. Sergeant Hughes understood what was being said in German. They said, well, dispose of them in the usual way. Which he knew what was meant. And he got them in a little copse. And this SS corporal was grinning, sneering. He loved it. He wanted to shoot them. You've got to understand the SS to realize how brutal they were. They were, imbued with this dreadful thing. And he was just looking forward to shooting them. And they'd actually clicked their rifles to shoot them. And an Italian woman came by with laundry on her head. So the corporal cursed and waited for her to be out of the way. And then they had a few more seconds to live. And then Italian farmer came with a pony and trap. And they had to wait for him to get out of the way. And then a miracle happened. A senior officer came on a motorbike. He said, what's happening? And Fred Hughes, the sergeant, said, told him. That they were, and he really went berserk. He took the corporal's name, told him he would be reported, whether or not anything happened, because they were all in disarray, the German army anyway. Probably nothing happened to him. But at least they were saved. And the general had them taken up to a mess where they were fed and looked after, and then returned to the battalion, because the war was then becoming over.
So this is in the area of the River Po?
Yes.
In 45?
45.
In the spring?
Now, yes, we're getting up now to May. Now the thing is here, Alfred Walden was the chap I'm talking about, and Mr. Klaus, Sammy Klaus. Sammy Klaus died last year, and Alfred Walden I stayed with in Italy later on in the autumn. Now, since when he came back, he was a changed person. He was very impatient, fiery. And since he came back with that happening to him, nothing mattered. Everything, he's cool, calm, and he's still, with that one experience, has made him cool, calm, and collected. After that, so what? What's important? He's a wonderful chap. And I remember what he was and what he is now. He said, well, if anything happens like that to you, you change your opinion of life. You think, well, this is it, I'm still here. Nothing else is of great import after that. Sorry.
And what were you doing in the winter of 1944-45?
Just general patrols, but nothing too potent. And then map making. Yes, I was with Colonel Burns quite a lot. Later he became the colonel of the regiment, Major General Sir George Burns, who died 3 years ago, sadly. He was a wonderful, wonderful character. general patrols, listening posts, with a line going out, that was on Monte Soli, take a line out as far as possible on the end of a telephone, seeing targets, ringing the artillery, giving a map reference. Then the war finished and we came to a place called Romans de Zonzo, which was a charming little place. We were billeted with the priest, the intelligence section.
Where roughly is this?
Near Red Puliana. That doesn't mean much to you, does it? Getting halfway between Venice and Trieste. That's the general big places. And we were very happy being billeted with the parish priest, because he had the best wine cellar in Romans. And there was a village idiot who used to ring the church bell for him. But he suddenly got to, while we were there, he suddenly got to like ringing the bells so much that he'd ring them all the time. People were getting confused as to when there was a church service and when there wasn't. He just used to love ringing them. He was really the village idiot. But remember, there was this girl who, she became pregnant, and she knew that if she blamed this village idiot, then she would get a state payment because he would not have the money to maintain her. See, if it was a man that she could sue him, but the village idiot, the state would pay. She got it all worked out. So she sued him for a maintenance order, or paternity order. And at the local tribunale, we knew all this was going on, and the priest was most intrigued at all this. And we went along to this tribunale, which was a small court room, and the tribunal judge was there, and all the young girls of the village who love a bit of scandal, they were all sat around there to see what was all giggling, to see what was going to happen. And this poor little devil, this village idiot, was there, quite stupid, and he was being asked by the interrogator, have you been with this woman? And he made it clear to him, meaning had he had sexual relations with her. And I remember he said, no, no, non ella, 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 ella. He pointed around to all the women in the court. Her, 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 her. Which rather shut them up. It was a lovely court case. I don't know whether that would come over on the tape very well. Well, I'm trying to put records right about the Grenadiers, about the partisans.
Did you go up into Austria?
No. We ended up in Trieste facing the Tito. That was a sad affair.
In what way was it so sad?
On the Istrian Peninsula, there were up to 200 foibers. A foiber is a defunct shaft, volcanic shaft, going down to the bowels of the earth. I've tried throwing stones and tin cans. You never hear them reach bottom. They're frightening. Italian cavalry officers used to jump their horses over them to show how brave they were. But it was a means of disposing people. Now, the Tito's partisans, to me, were not as admirable as the others, in that they were... Churchill had a mistake made. He was advised that he had a choice of supplying two units, either Mihailovic, who was a royalist and a Serb, or Tito, who was a communist and a Croat. And he was advised to give arms to Tito, Broz, instead of Mihailovic. And he realized his mistake later. And when Tito got arms, he didn't fight the Germans very much with them. He was fighting Mihailovic. It was a power struggle. And then when the war was over, he managed to capture Mihailovic and had him murdered. And Churchill was absolutely distraught. He was shattered when the mistake was realized. Well, there you are. It's one of those things that happened. But there was an Italian doctor, very young Italian doctor, who was working with the Yugoslavs, and Tito turned suddenly against all people who were not Yugoslavs or Slovenes. And this young doctor would stitch up their wounds, perhaps on their hand. Well, it would be very painful because he had no painkillers, he had no anaesthetic. And they did turn against him simply because he was Italian, despite the work he had done up in the hills with them. And what they did, they, with his own catgut, they stitched his mouth up and stitched his eyes and threw him down a foiber. That was a way of dispatching. Absolutely cruel.
What did you see yourself when...
We heard about it after, when it was too late. It was happening among us. We were there. But we always knew a day too late. We never saw it happen, but then it was reported to us. Did you know? And when I went to this doctor who was called Rovati, and he was most upset. And he said, yes, I knew him. He was a personal friend of mine. And this has happened. It was one of those things that did happen.
Were shots exchanged between British forces and partisans?
No, but we did have a deserter come, and a Yugoslav deserter. And the Yugoslavs created hell. They demanded him back. And the way we took him back was to the through Trieste to the border, past the sports arena, which was where the Yugoslavs had their post. He jumped out of the 1500 weight into the canal in Trieste to try to get away from us. We fished him out and took him back. He was handed over and treated rather, shoved around, I thought, rather brutally when we got there. And our officers heard to their horror that before we had got back, he'd already been shot. So any deserter that came after that, excuses were made that he was not with us. It was horrible.
And was the local population Italian or Croat?
Of Trieste, Italian. Of the area around Sajana, Postumia, and around all that area they were Slovenes. And right up towards Postumia, it was all part of Italy. And all the Istria was part of Italy, right down to Pola. The city of Pola was Italian, but the countryside between cities, they were Slovenes. And under the treaty of 1950, I think it was, most of Istria went over to Slovenia. Now, I've been back to Slovenia now. It's a wonderful little country, as it is. They broke away from Serbia, from Yugoslavia, and they have made application to join NATO. It's a small country, population of approximately 2 million, about the size of Wales, capital Ljubljana, bordered on with Italy, Austria, Hungary, and Croatia.
And how did your own service come to an end?
I was intelligence sergeant at Sazana, which is now part of Slovenia, and they said, look here, you are due for release now, demob. Would you like to stay for another month? Because we're going back, the battalion's going back to England any time. As soon as you set foot back in England, you are demobbed. Come on, you are doing a job here. I think you'll find it interesting. I said, well, I am, actually. Well, stay another month. So I stayed another month. And I had my, whatever it was, age service group 31. DVGA. Deferred Voluntary Gentleman's Agreement. So at the end of that month, the RQMS would say, another month, Gordy? So I said, yes, all right. So it ended up I was there 6 months more after the time I should have been demobbed. And I must say, coming up to the end of the story, I found it very much harder coming out of the army than going into it. Although it was a shock going in, it was hard coming out.
Why?
Well, it was like being dispossessed. I was like a fish out of water. It was the influential years of my life, from 20 to 26. It's the character moulding period of life, really, isn't it?
Had you become institutionalised?
Almost. I was told that I could go back to take the same rank, providing I re-enlisted within 12 months. I even got as far as the steps of Exeter recruiting office, back to the old chapel again, pondering. But then I was told, well, there's no intelligence section now. You would have to do all the sweat and do drill courses and goodness knows what. And I thought, oh, I don't want to go through all that again. I've done it. So I decided not. So I stayed here in my father's firm.